keep this frequency clear.
But guess what? You don't get to tell me when I can stop speaking. Well,
tune in to Queering the Air.
Report on trans and intersex issues with accuracy, dignity, and respect.
Podcast edition, and therefore, sorry, no music.
Change the narrative rather than combat the narrative.
I know who I am. Took me 20 years to get here. I'm not going to let some idiot senator destroy that.
3CR Community Radio.
Our stories are best told when we are the ones telling them. It helps combat the perpetuation of stereotypes, misinformation, and lies.
I discovered in the face of overwhelming prejudice and persecution an incredible strength through being fiercely fabulous.
Welcome to Queering the Air, Sundays from 3 to 4 on 3CR. 3CR is proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Welcome one and welcome all. This is Queering the Air, live on the air, on 855 AM. And I have a rather dazed and confused Oscar in front of me who keeps pointing at his ears or their ears. And it's like, what? I don't know. What are you going on about?
I can't hear anything that's coming through. So
yeah, you can't hear anything through your...
We're all dogging it today.
So to speak.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, we'll get you to change mics, I think, at some point. Yes. So my name's Madison Moffat. My pronouns are she and her. And I am with...
Oscar Donahue. That is my full legal name.
Oscar Donahue.
pronouns they and he.
They and he.
Very cool guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cool enough.
That's all I ask for.
Cool enough to be here at least.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
You're welcome. And we shall start as we like to with a special announcement because we like to encourage people to subscribe to 3CR, but as a matter of fact, the Radiothon is coming.
3CR's annual Radiothon fundraiser is almost here.
This June, we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible.
3CR Radiothon is coming. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Yes, and... As has been pointed out on our show quite a few times, shows like Queering the Air and other shows of its ilk rely on the support of its listeners, as does 3CR as a whole.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so basically without that support, we're not going to find ourselves in a well-funded position or indeed in a adequately funded position.
Yeah, we need you.
We do need
you. Cannot do without you.
And so, therefore, the Radiothon is coming soon, and more details about that will be upcoming. And, yes, we shall be asking for your support.
And if you can't possibly wait for Radiothon, you can still donate and support us.
Yes, you can. Yes.
We have the technology.
What are we doing? Just hand a bowl out or something?
Or you can donate to 3CR on the 3CR website.
Indeed.
Indeed. At any time.
And subscribe at 3CR on the 3CR website.
That's right.
Yes. So, how have you been, Oscar?
How have I been?
How have you been?
You know how it is being trans in the world.
Yeah.
I didn't celebrate Ida Hobbit.
Didn't, no.
No.
Well, is it really about celebrating?
That's the thing. So I'm a bit emotionally all over the place today, being like, oh, what, who am I? What is it about the state of the world? Oh.
Yeah. And that's, I think, because you've been doing a bit of research around Ida Hobbit.
Yes, I have. I have learnt so many things, and I am so excited to.
And it's not the type of information that is likely to leave you perfectly stable.
Yeah.
Upon discovery.
Yeah. It's been, I am shooketh indeed.
Yes, ye doth be shooketh. Yes, indeed.
And how are you, Madison?
Yeah, I'm the same, you know, sort of, I don't know, it's just so much absolute bloody nonsense going on in the world at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm hearing people say, oh, you'd be glad that, you know, that Labor got in again. And it's like, well, okay, so, you know, when it comes to comparing, you know, what it might have been like under Dutton versus what it was likely to be like under Albanese as Prime Minister, sure, I suppose my own personal preference is for Albanese, but a Labor government does not necessarily mean, you know, a great time for the trans community, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's the lesser of two evils, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think with financial global markets being as unsure as they are, you know, just neoliberal politics will, I think, dictate over the course of the next couple of years cutbacks.
Mm-hmm.
The US, for instance, has just lost its superior rating in the Moody's scale. So they are no longer considered to be a premium borrower. So if the US suffers in that regard, you know, other countries that are engaged in trade in a similar ilk, such as ourselves, you know, that are rising their debt levels, you know, be warned, you know, Moody's is likely to come after yourself as well. Once you start losing confidence in that kind of thing, that's when you also start losing government revenue. And when you lose government revenue, quite frankly, it's our services that are often the first on the chopping block. They don't even mention it. They just do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of things coming.
Yeah.
Lots of awful and exciting things.
Yes, yes. And speaking of awful and exciting, but mostly exciting things, I don't think there's anything awful in this particular segment. we have our regular segment that is known as Meow.
It's your favourite part of the show, isn't it? The little intro.
The little intro, yeah. So, meow, 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 meow. What's going on? Meow, 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 meow.
Meow, meow, meow. That's an excellent question. You tell me what's going on.
Well, there's going to be a trans and gender diverse job fair very soon. And indeed, specifically on Friday the 23rd of May. Starts at 10, ends at 2. You know, I'm not quite sure what they do if you fail to leave at 2. I think you're in danger of being asked to clean up.
Yeah.
And you don't want that.
No, no, no.
So get out by about 1:50, so you're not asked to help clean up.
Yeah, it's going to be a rowdy time, so mess everywhere.
So the Trans and Gender Diverse Job Fair basically is a partnership between Mary Beck City Council and Transgender Victoria. And it's has a number of organisations that want to bring trans and gender diverse talent into their worker base.
Mm-hmm. Get those voices into some more corporate spaces.
Yeah, they want to make sure that, you know, when the people are lining up for the elevator, you know, looking sad and depressed because it's Monday, that a certain percentage of those sad and depressed people are transgender diverse and non-binary. It's important.
Yeah, spread the depression.
It is, it is. Equity in corporate malaise.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, you know, seriously, basically it is an opportunity for trans and gender diverse and non-binary people to connect with trans supportive companies, supportive of in various levels, you know. Yeah,
and I think it's also a really good opportunity to go and find out what the landscape looks like, even if you're not interested in joining any of these organizations.
Yeah, yeah,
you know a lot of people who know a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Even just being there, I think, would be exciting. I'm going to be there for that reason. So yeah. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it like that?
I've registered. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I'll be there as well. You know, people may still want to turn up even though we're going to be there. So so by all means, show up Friday the 23rd of May, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the Brunswick Town Hall.
Mm.
Yes.
Fun times. And there's also some queer stuff happening at the Affirmation Station tomorrow, the 19th.
Oh, yes.
Yes, 6:30 till 8:30. They're doing a Q&A. It's called the Trans Sex Ed You Never Had.
Ah, yes. Well, that's just about all the trans sex ed, isn't it?
Yeah, I would. Because, yeah.
You know, I mean, how much of it would you have actually had at school is the unspoken
zero.
Bit there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't exist.
Didn't exist. Didn't Very exist. Peer-led my sex education as a trans person.
Yes. Oh, okay. I was about to be shocked. I thought you were going to say your sex ed lessons at school were peer-led. It's like, no.
Wow.
No.
Didn't exist.
If all. Only, if only. Yes. No, I was taught, you know, that there were just men and there were women and they procreated and made babies. That's basically what I was told.
That's it. That's the whole story.
And
surely.
There was this type of genitalia and that type of genitalia and nothing, you know, apart from those two types and, you know, and away they went and babies were made.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about.
Or at least that's what it was all about as far as I was taught.
Yes.
And I sat there feeling quite stirred and confused, but I couldn't work out why. Just couldn't quite work out why.
I didn't care. I just dissociated through sex ed in school.
Yeah. So basically what they're going to have is experts answer burning questions. Things like topics will be covered like consent and respectful relationships,
mm-hmm.
gender, sex and relationships, sexuality, illness and sex. You know, so it's quite inclusive by the looks of things.
Yeah, they're also talking about polyamory, kink and BDSM, porn, like...
Yeah, sex work.
Yeah.
Is going to be included.
It's all that stuff that you can't ask questions about in the more mainstream.
Yeah, so I've been looking at it from a historical perspective because, you know, because of my age, but, you know, there's no other way of putting it. But, in fact, a lot of this just isn't covered now.
No.
In the curriculum.
No, not at all. Well, yeah, that's a tricky one. I do wonder if they talk about porn in schools. I don't know. I don't know anything about what it looks like at the moment, but I'd be interested.
Well, it's prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, porn
is prevalent.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's everywhere all the time.
They're watching it no matter whether they're talking about it at school or not.
Exactly. So surely they would have to be talking about it at school because it's right there all the time.
Yeah,
queer. But then it's the abstinence-only approach.
Queer kids were right there all the time in the 80s. It didn't mean they weren't ignored.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, absolutely ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho. That's enough of my pontification.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's also on the 7th of June going to be a queer multicultural carnival.
Mm.
So, yes, it's a celebration of culture, creativity and community. You can expect live performances by queer musicians, poets and storytellers and interactive art installations but also creative workshops. So you don't necessarily have to just observe. You can also participate.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And, more importantly, an array of cultural culinary delights, foods and drinks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I'm in.
Well,
you can't keep me away now.
No, that's right. And it's a free event. I don't think the food's free, but, you know, it's free to register.
The smells are free.
And you do have to register. And it's part of the Pride Month at the Victorian Pride Centre.
Cool.
And it's part of the Rise in Pride initiative.
So when and where was that, sorry?
So that is on the 7th of June, starts at 10 a.m. and finishes at 6 p.m. So again, leave at 5:58 so that no one asks you to clean up, to help clean up.
That is going to be rowdy.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great time. There's something else before we finish up this seg that I wanted to mention, which is Art Club with Talisa at the Affirmation Station on Tuesdays.
No, you can't.
Well, too bad. I went for the first time last Tuesday and it was awesome. I had never done anything like it before. And it was beautiful. It was just a small group of us, but I had never realized the deep exploration that you do through art, especially in a group of queer people. Like,
so what was explored?
We talked about pleasure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and what that meant for all the people in the room was, like, so vastly different, and it brought up some really horrible things for some and some, you know, really euphoric things for others, and just seeing that array of people's stuff. Amazing. We love. And the beautiful things that come out of it as well.
Okay. And how does it what does it look like? I mean, to say if I was observing from 10 metres away, what would it look like?
So it's a group of us around a table in a room at Affirmation Station. And there's a bunch of art supplies in the middle. Like, there's textures and graphite and lots of magazines. I got really into collage, which apparently I love, turns out.
It's funny how you discover these sort of things. Absolutely.
So it's just you pick up whatever medium you are into or want to explore and go from there. You're sitting across from people and you can share or not share.
Cool.
Whatever it looks like for you.
And when is that?
That is on Tuesday the 20th, 5 till 6 at the Affirmation Station, and it's every Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for your insistence on covering it, despite my disgraceful insistence that you don't.
I had to rebel against your no.
Please do. That's what we do here at Queering the Air. We rebel. And that has been
meow 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 meow.
Woof. Meow 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 meow.
Other assorted noises.
Meow.
Well, that's been meow, 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 meow.
It's been, animal noises.
It's pretty, I don't know. After Midsummer, things seem to have dropped off a bit. It was actually difficult to find, or more difficult to find, things of interest. Mm. And I found that if anything, we were promoting the same stuff that, was just regular because it was always monthly or always fortnightly. Mm. But now there seems to be a little more of a resurgence again. I'm not sure what it's about, but maybe is it Pride Month coming up or something? There just seems to be more.
Well, it was Ida Hobbit yesterday.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of flags things to people being like, oh, we need to get the gays together.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not just the gays, but that is the message. You know,
yeah.
But more of that later.
Mm-hmm.
More of that later. So I'm going to play something that I think historically is a little bit interesting from a queer perspective. Firstly, it's an Australian group.
Mm.
And it was from the 1970s, and what we're going to play was a track of theirs that was released in 1976. And some people consider this to be a bisexual anthem, and indeed Q News in an article declared this to be a bisexual anthem in as recently as 2019. But it's a song that actually does make a reference to schizophrenia, in as much as it says that someone has a schizophrenic mind, because, as the song says, I like it both ways. So it's seen as a bisexual anthem, but when you listen to the lyrics, there are references to mental health in it. But, on the other hand, in glam rock at the time, being open quote crazy end quote or from outer space or in some way being other as a human being was actually all the rage in rock and pop. So it gets the context of it in part is about that. But on the other hand, it was also produced by Molly Meldrum, who is known to be gay and had relationships with women. So, it's probably bisexual as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, the lead singer who referred to himself as Georgie Boy is known to have been gay, or considered to be gay. Didn't go on about it because you didn't in the 1970s. Although certainly expressed some of it in song in this track. So it's a track by a band called Supernaut, and it's called I Like It Both Ways. And I do wonder, you just sort of, give a bit of a pre-warning. It does kind of harp a little on how one's dad considers him insane because of it. So it's sort of mixing some of those messages, which, from if that was released now, would not be great at all. In fact, would be completely unacceptable.
Mm.
And I think that, to listen to this, one has to listen to it in that context, including perhaps that context of how glam rock sort of made otherness, you know, and or indeed sometimes being an alien being, you know, beamed down to Earth, part of the rock persona. So anyway, this is from 1976, rather, from Supernaut, produced by Molly Meldrum, popularized as a result of Molly Meldrum showing it on Countdown to promote it after a number of radio stations had decided not to play it because of its bisexual content. This is I Like It Both Ways. And before that, I'll play a little clip. One of my heroes is H.G. and Roy. But H.G. and Roy, they weren't, unfortunately, above a little bit of kind of sort of homophobia at times, you know, they'd sort of harp on, you know, gay things being funny, you know. So, but I think this is also part of an example of how this song, although forgotten by a lot of people, is still kind of part of the Australiana zeitgeist. So just before the song, I'll play a little clip of H.G. and Roy making reference to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this weekend, the Sweethearts of Swing. Look, they're a high school band from Geelong. They're travelling up to perform at Darling Harbour in the Sydney area. They do a tremendous flute-driven version of I Like It Both Ways, which is well worth getting along to see. I recommend it to everybody. And then after that, I'm going to see...
As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording. Yeah, so, Supernaut. And Oscar and I have been having a bit of a chat as we listen to it and kind of, you know, been analysing it as we go, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting song. That's the first time I've heard it.
Yeah. And one of the things that you said about it was that the way that the it's not so much the language, but the way the language is sung is kind of reclamatory.
Yeah. The reclamation of, being insane. Like now it's... you know, sanist. We wouldn't use that language.
No.
But, yeah, it's... Yeah, you're going to call me crazy? I am crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And very similar to, say, for instance, David Bowie's alien personas.
Mm.
You know, this is, and, you know, deal with it. This is how it is and how I am sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, with that, you know, I think one of the potentially offensive parts of the song is repeating the word insane again and again and again. But then the way it's sung, particularly within the context of glam rock, in glam rock you would glamorize things that others find offensive, you know, and it's sort of throwing it back in the face of the mainstream, which is sort of the explanation. They don't just keep saying insane five times. They're increasing into a crescendo where it ends with a like, yeah, baby, kind of fail, as in, yeah, I am that. You know, insane kind of thing, you know, with the rock and roll riff getting louder and louder.
Yeah, like it's something to be excited about.
Yeah, so it's purposeful. So I think it's one of those, you know, artifacts of history where you're sort of looking at it and sometimes you're wincing, but there is a relevance there. And I think that there might even be some lessons with regards to how we can push the envelope in similar ways with our existing culture.
Well, I think that language continues today. It's not like that's not used in the same way.
No, no. So, you know, I will be playing later G-Flip's Waste of Space.
Mm.
And that's sort of talking in terms of an internalization of that view.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? Maybe, you know, in the future people will find it not de rigueur and maybe even offensive to be sort of... expressing those internalized thoughts for some reason because things have changed.
But yeah, there's the mad movement. Like there are talks happening in the UN this week, like this at the moment about, mad riots and normalizing that and what that needs to look like medically in medical systems. Like,
yes.
It's
and so within that context,
it's happening.
We might find ourselves having to, in 10 years' time, listen to G-Flip, you know, with a bit of a filter acknowledging the language of the time in ways that we can't even predict, because you couldn't predict back in the 76 what that song that we just played would represent in one way or another. You just can't predict it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as difficult as it might be to hear,
yeah,
it is also like. Awesome to acknowledge that it isn't like that anymore.
No.
Like,
no.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Progress is being made.
And that the language was so steeped in ableism and a whole range of other things. Notions, for instance, repeated in the song about the fact that they're bi. Well, what makes them bi? Well, the fact that they can't make up their mind, you know, which, well, that's just biphobia, you know, 101 to say that bi people can't make up their mind. That's, of course, nonsense. But, you know, but nonetheless, it was a cry by, you know, a band whose lead singer was gay, a producer that was openly gay, at least within the industry, Molly Meldrum, producing this song that was so out of touch with the mainstream attitudes, it was actually banned by radio stations until Meldrum plugged it on Countdown.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
I find...
It's interesting.
The use of the word bi as well is... That's changed.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't have it both ways because there's not two.
It's pan then, surely.
Well, yeah, but it isn't that distinct classification. Like, people still use bi as meaning, like, self-gender, like, your own gender and other genders.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting because I went through that period where I was like, I'm not bisexual. I don't care what people... gender is. I'm pan. I find bi, you know, kind of triggering and awful.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, that's been like a slow discovery.
Yeah.
For me.
I'm not sure I'm there, you know. I don't find it terrible, I suppose. There may well be people who, you know, see the people that they're attracted to in a binary way, and if that's what happens for them, how bad is that? I don't know. I'm not entirely certain. I don't want to be dictating to people what they're attracted to, you know what I mean, and how they're attracted to it.
Yeah, but it's lost that specificity in language.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, and hopefully the conflict in what I'm thinking is evident in the voice that I'm using because I don't know where to go there.
Mm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's gender and sexuality.
It's messy. It's
amazing.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Confusing. It's chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what makes it so beautiful.
So, segueing from Supernaut to the topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So, Oscar, you went to a particular symposium recently.
I did. I went to a trans health symposium. I won't mention too much about that because I wasn't meant to be there.
Yeah. Well, you know, people knew that you weren't on the invitee list and nonetheless you were welcome.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I found that really, really interesting about the state of healthcare in this state, in Victoria, and how difficult it is to refer to people by their correct pronouns, to not have them have to out themselves at every possible level if they want to receive any kind of healthcare.
And this has come. This comes from the state of information management systems that are shared. Or single to various hospitals and medical clinics, where you know those administrative systems are both inadequate and often also they're the product of improvement and Band-Aid improvement and another Band-Aid improvement over time. So that if you make the slightest change to them, you don't know what you're going to do to the database overall.
Yeah.
And so there's a need in many cases, I believe, my understanding is, for a complete overhaul, including perhaps a complete replacement of the database systems, you know, within hospitals, for instance, just to make what we see, I think quite rightly, rather modest changes to our profiles on them.
Yeah, it's this tricky thing of trying to balance funding, for one. It's incredibly expensive process.
Yeah.
But also you can't give people adequate healthcare if you're not even getting their name right. Like that's wild. But in Victoria, there's no like local health system like there is in New South Wales, where I'm from.
Yes.
And New South Wales is undergoing at the moment a project called the Single Digital Patient Record that would rectify this kind of issue.
That being ensuring that there's the appropriate gender marker on the profile.
Yeah, and that that profile is accessible across hospitals, across like various health services, so you don't have to have that conversation every time.
Yes.
Which I think is the most like harrowing part of it, is having to out yourself to the receptionist.
Yes.
Yeah. Not my favourite, personally.
No, and repeatedly. I've actually had a specialist receptionist speak to me about not being able to find me on their records, right? And it was because they had my dead name still, despite the fact that I'd God knows how many times told them about my now name, Madison. And went after a 10-minute conversation where I kept insisting they needed to keep looking, and this receptionist was increasingly dismissive of me. When it became to a realization of what had actually happened, she put it all on me that I should have told her that I was trans.
Yeah.
It was all my fault.
That's awful.
And I actually called her out on it, and she doubled down. I was the one out of line.
You have to disclose or else you're in trouble. Yeah.
I literally asked her, you know, and of course she's just one receptionist, but, you know, so she's not necessarily representative of everyone within the health sector, but still, you know, I did put it to her. So what you're telling me is that I should out myself every time as a beginning of a conversation with a receptionist. And the answer was yes.
Yes.
And I ended, now this clinic, this professional was operating within a specific clinic within a private hospital. So I ended up making inquiries within the private hospital, and it took a little while before I was sufficiently up the chain in who I was engaging with that the response came back as a positive of, yes, you're quite right, Madison, this was inappropriate. I had to go through a number of people and demand to see their manager. You know, I started becoming a Karen, you know, asking for their manager and then their manager before I finally came across someone who seemed to have had sufficient training in this to understand that I was right in expecting this to be addressed.
Yeah, that was something else that was spoken about at this symposium, because there is there's very little staff education.
Mm.
And, you know, some of these major hospitals are running on one diversity, equity and inclusion, like a staff of one in that team.
Yeah, yeah. So someone that often, in a tokenistic way, I've found, ends up being selected by the team, often because they're the queer person.
Yes.
You're the queer person, therefore you have to be our liaison officer for this.
Yeah, and having that pressure, that expectation of you being the spokesperson for every LGBTIQA plus person.
Yeah. Just because you happen to, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they were speaking about it having to be a reactionary role, because there's just no time, there's not enough resources to take those kinds of initiatives to build something new.
Yeah, so rather than them being key to the team ensuring that things don't happen, instead that liaison officer ends up being the person repeatedly resolving escalated problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, reactive, as you say.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, putting out fires instead of
preventing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, building systems where fires don't happen.
Yeah, oh. So I think that, you know, it's also important to talk about this within the perspective of Ida Hobbit. And I believe that that's part of what you quite rightly would wish to speak to, Oscar.
Yes, I didn't know anything about Ida Hobbit until very recently, I knew about Ida Hobbit in terms of cupcakes once a year at work.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll share a little story. A brother of mine who was a team leader for a store within one of the three major retailers in this country complained to me that they all expected as a team leader to do a team toolbox talk on Ida Hobbit. And this was, you know, I don't know, probably about 4 years ago. And the main complaint was that, you know, firstly, he had no bloody idea what Ida Hobbit was. And yet, you know, he was now expected to be someone who described it to a team. And secondly, he didn't care.
Yeah, well, we didn't even get the explainer. We didn't even get a talk.
Yeah, yeah.
We got Happy Ida Hobbit. Okay.
Which in itself is a bit much. I mean, is that something to be happy about?
Well, yeah, it's kind of depressing for me. It's not a happy time. It's sort of this lamentation because it marks the date in which homosexuality was no longer considered to be a mental illness by the World Health Organization.
Yeah, so it stopped being registered as an illness within the DSM.
Yes. And it came, Ida Hobbit started in 2004, so like quite a while. It was retrospectively chosen.
Over a decade.
Yes.
Yeah,
and just having reminders of that history, and not even history, it's currently still pathologized to such a great degree.
But that's the thing, you know, the way that it is kind of, it is kind of presented, particularly in the corporate world. And it's very strange, actually. I find that the corporate world has latched onto Ida Hobbit for some reason. There's all sorts of other celebratory, you know, queer events. But Ida Hobbit in many organisations has become the queer Are You OK Day, where, you know, any true meaning of the day is completely lost. But like you say, you know, it has, you know, it has specially printed cupcakes involved.
It does.
You know, yeah, instead of "Are you okay?" on top of your cupcake, adding the number of carcinogens that's, you know, in your cupcake, through, you know, all the supposedly edible ink, you know, you've got even more because this time it's a rainbow on it.
Yeah, I will never be able to look at a cupcake without thinking of cancer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madison.
No worries. It's probably complete slander, but anyway. Yes.
Yeah, not ideal. Not my favorite, the way that it's, oddly celebrated, especially in corporate cultures. But
yeah, because let's talk about it, you know, the celebration bit. I mean, what exactly, from a transgender, diverse and non-binary perspective, for instance, or an intersex perspective, what is there to celebrate?
Yeah, there's still so much. It is still pathologized. Gender dysphoria is still a diagnosis.
Yes.
Intersex disorders are still considered disorders and named as such.
Yes. Like, so within the DSM.
Yeah, within the DSM, and, you know, we still have, I'm mentally ill, apparently, because I'm trans. Like, that is legit fact. Like, I am categorized in the DSM as someone who's disordered because of my gender.
So there was a review of the DSM where being transgender itself had previously been seen as a disorder, and that was removed. But what hasn't been removed, or what it's been replaced with, is this categorization of gender dysphoria as a diagnosable condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really much better, is it, you know? Yeah, good news, because you're trans, we don't necessarily think you are madness incarnate, you know, but you do suffer from, if you at all find yourself confused for an elongated period in a way that causes some suffering to you with regards to your gender identity, then great news, we've got a new diagnosis, you know, that we're going to slot you in instead.
Yeah, it is.
It's just irony, by the way. Sarcasm, by the way.
I don't even know. I don't even know what to say about the DSM. It makes me so angry because it's in the same vein as the introduction of prolonged grief disorder, which is, if you're sad about a loved one passing away for more than a year, then you have a disorder.
Yeah.
And I understand the DSM as a point of access to getting the support for what you need support with.
Yes.
But the way that it exists currently is just colonialist and just white supremacy. Like, it's a bad time, the way that we categorize what happens inside of people.
Yeah, the thing is with it, there can also, I think, be a distinction between what the DSM is intended for and what it's actually used for. And, you know, the state of health, where this biomedical model, which basically, for listeners not familiar, basically treats it as if medicine is all about what's happening to your body, you know, the biological and physical aspects of what is happening to you, where mental health is just slotted in as being just another type of physical thing where your brain doesn't necessarily fire properly. in some way or another. So it's that's what's referred to as the biomedical model. And, you know, that if you study medicine or nursing in any which or social work in any which way these days, you'll be told that, particularly in a tertiary environment, you'll be told that that model is outdated and that there's, a biopsychosocial, cultural, spiritual model is often how it's called. And that basically means that you're not just looking at the biomedical anymore and you're focusing on things like, the cultural aspects. They use spiritual, but, I know, Oscar, you don't like the term spiritual, but, aspects that are of importance to you, meaning to you.
I don't like the term spiritual, like, as it applies to me. I don't see myself as a spiritual person.
Yeah.
But the term spiritual in this context is purpose and belonging and belonging to something that's greater than yourself.
Than yourself, yeah, indeed.
Yeah, so that's what that means, even though I don't identify with the word spiritual. Yeah.
And so arguably, if the DSM existed within, a medical world where that sort of best practice model is actually in place, perhaps the DSM could be used for good. But I think the harsh reality is that we don't. The existing health sector is still very biophysical medical.
Yeah, absolutely. It's entrenched. It's how the system works, and I think it has to be a complete, disabling to be able to actually treat the person rather than, the bio.
Yeah.
The disorder, the biological disorder, apparently.
Yeah, treating the whole person, which we hear again and again.
We do.
But I don't see much of it.
No. As someone who is studying social work, it's talked a lot about in our degree. I have a lot of people who have decided to study work. So social work coming from the biomedical model, we have doctors, paramedics, and them not wanting to practice in that profession because they are seeing that the actual cause of a lot of these things is social and it's not being addressed.
Yeah.
It's being stigmatized through the biomedical model.
Yeah, and I think that gap between, to a certain extent, that gap between what's seen as the best practice model and the way it's actually done, I think that's colonialism.
Mm.
That's colonialism desperately gripping to what it knows and what it likes, what it prefers.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's kind of just tradition.
Yeah. Because a classic example that you're even taught in training, around this stuff, because I've done some applied mental health tertiary training myself recently. A classic example I'll give is how health clinics in using the, biopsychosocial, cultural, spiritual model would be culturally sensitive to specific needs and even specific health frameworks of First Nations cultures. But good luck. Good luck actually getting these clinics to A, perform in that way, and then B, continue to be state funded.
Yeah, that's the issue really, isn't it? The funding. It's all funding. Capitalism. Grr.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we're going to play Dead or Alive and a track, of course, from 1986. It is Madison, after all, who's panelling today, called My Heart Goes Bang. Now, this actually predated Stock Aitken and Waterman's productions of Bananarama, Mel and Kim, and more famously Rick Astley. But if you listen closely, one might find exactly where it was that Peter Waterman found the sound he then later used. Oh, controversy.
Ooh.
As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording. Ah, yes, Pete Burns, lead singer of Dead or Alive, singing that eternal love story, the conflict between needing medical attention from a doctor and their heart going bang, bang, bang. Oh, doctor, give me the drug.
Please.
As it says.
Yes. I do love a little bit of drug when things go bang, bang.
So did Peepo. So did Peepo, the sounds of it. I think we're onto something.
Indeed.
So, we've been whinging about things.
We love a good whinge, don't we?
Well, it's bloody worthwhile whinge, I think.
Lots to whinge about.
Lots to whinge about in the area that we've been talking. Mm-hmm. What are the actions? Preach. Preach, oh Oscar, preach.
Oh my goodness. There is so much to be done.
Isn't there?
So much that could be done. My biggest thing that I want to preach about is law reform. There are so many law reforms that are there that just should not be there.
Right.
Obviously, there's this stuff happening in Queensland where they're now denying access to medical care to trans children.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
It seems to fall on the back of this, you know, questionable report. That is to say that many in the medical profession have questioned it from the UK, that led to similar political actions from the British government.
Mm, the Cass report.
Yes.
Yeah. Horrible. Horrible.
Mm.
Do read it. It's an interesting read.
Yeah.
But very bleak.
Interesting is one way of putting it.
Yeah. there's also conversion therapy. That's only been banned in New South Wales since last month.
Mm, what's the state here in Victoria?
In Victoria, it's been banned since February 2021.
Yeah,
so
not for long.
Good job, well done.
Yeah.
And it's not banned at all in Western Australia, Northern Territory or Tasmania.
Mm.
So there's a lot that still needs to happen there.
Yeah, I mean, a so-called treatment that has absolutely no medical basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where the relevant core medical fundamentals are the antithesis of the so-called treatment.
Yeah, it's a weaponization of therapy.
Yeah.
Which is
just unbelievable. If it was happening to anyone else, it would be wouldn't even need, I think, legislation to be passed before people would be prosecuted. You know, but it's funny. As soon as it's happening to gay people, there needs to be a special law before that kind of abuse can be prosecuted against.
Yeah.
I find that interesting.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I find the comparison with what we're talking about in Queensland to what is happening to intersex children across this country, across the world.
Yeah, well, and intersex babies.
Yeah. Like non-consensual and unnecessary surgery.
Yes.
In Tasmania, they've prohibited procedures intersex procedures, unless the child consents, if they can, or it has to go through the court and be in the child's best interest, which in itself is a little bit questionable still, but it's only that. That doesn't exist in Victoria, even.
I've done lots of paralegal work, and I've done lots of work in regulatory environments. So I'll just put it out there. If I wanted a in the best interests argument to be adjudicated by someone, I would not consider your typical judge to be that much in touch with mainstream society that I'd place that decision in their hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it is such a strange thing that, that people get to decide on that stuff.
No. Well, you know, if there's one look that, you know, and I've spent a lot of time in court as a result of the work that I've done in the past, right? If there's one look that I recall again and again and again, it's the look on the face of a judge's associate, and that look is rolling their eyes after the judge said something.
Mm.
You know, these people are completely out of touch. The idea that they can be adjudicators when it comes to, or be some kind of vanguard when it comes to decision making in nuanced and sensitive, delicate situations like this, I think is just laughable.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking ridiculous.
Mm.
And it's ridiculous that in Queensland you can't get gender affirming care, but in Tasmania, like, you don't get to consent. It's not a consent model.
Yeah.
And in Tasmania, you can only get this surgery if the child consents. So it's just this complete contradiction in every way.
Yeah. Well, that's federalism.
Yeah. We love, we stand.
Yeah. So I think one of the key things we could be doing is doing our best to, in any which way we can, to support groups that focus on queer health.
Yes.
Could you name some?
I did name some, and now I cannot name some.
Yeah, I mean, Thorn Harbour Health, I think, is an obvious choice there.
Thorn Harbour Health, Drummond Street, is a lot.
Yeah. I know that Transgender Victoria do a lot of advocacy area in this area.
Yes, yeah. They do.
Yeah, I don't know how Victorians could support them, but ACON did play a part in the latest amendments bill that resulted, for instance, in people being able to very soon change their gender markers on their New South Wales birth certificate without having the need for invasive surgery. So come June, I will, for the first time in my life, have a birth certificate where the gender marker matches my gender, because I was born in New South Wales.
I was born in New South Wales too.
Yeah, so ACON is another example.
Yes.
I think sometimes maybe, you know, the nature of the health sector, both constitutionally and in terms of its actual operational structure, means that we focus on a lot of this stuff on a state level quite necessarily. But I think a lot of these fights are national fights.
Yeah, they are national fights. It's so strange that I can drive for 5 hours and I can't have my passport match my birth certificate.
No.
Like, that's bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in terms of getting involved as well, what you mentioned before about escalating and escalating until you get the answers.
Yeah.
Do please continue. Feel free. That is its own activism. And I think there are people who are trying to listen. So saying it loudly in every which way you can.
Yes. Yeah. So whenever you're up against these oppressive structures, be as loud and clear as you can as to your own individual dismay at it.
Mm.
And then on that basis, engage and support, you know, queer health organisations.
Yeah, write to your politicians. It's all of the way that we know change happens. There are protests happening throughout the country.
Yeah, turn up to things like the Trans Day of Visibility rallies and the like, and share with your fellow, you know, the fellow trans proletariat, you know, your experiences.
Yeah, it's the louder we can be, the more likely things will change.
No, I agree. Okay, so this has been Queering the Air. And we'd broadcast on 3CR Radical Radio on 855 on your AM radio dial and digitally streamed on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Next up is the Salaam Radio Show, and we're going to depart by playing G-Flip and a song called Waste of Space. This was your selection, Oscar.
It was my selection. G-Flip is from NAM, and they are a non-binary artist using they, them pronouns. And I just love this song. I don't know, I'm speechless.
It's a good choice. G-Flip with Waste of Space. Next up, Salaam Radio Show. As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording.